Look, if you're still buying weed from some guy named Trevor in a parking lot, you're doing it wrong. Mood.com delivers legal THC products straight to your door. Gummies, vapes, flower, the good stuff. No sketchy DMs, no med card. Just add to cart, check out, and boom, it's at your doorstep. It's legal in all 50 states thanks to the Farm Bill, and Mood's products actually work. Seriously, this isn't gas station garbage. It's small batch, lab tested, real results. Go to mood.com, use code FIRST20 for 20% off, and never run dry again. That's mood.com. Go get lit, legally.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Dynamite from the most rest inside. AEW lighting up the fuse. Sit back and enjoy the bubbly. As we hear from John and Waitay, where we're going, we don't need roads. And if the buck stops here, this thing might blow. Everything you hear, opinions of the show. And if you don't like it, go to the forums and let them know.
Welcome, YouTube, and for all of you on the Post Wrestling Cafe, you're still here, and we care for all of you deeply. Thank you so much. We're 45 minutes deep, the only news pack in pro wrestling that can combine the Raja Jackson incident with the latest on the Hulk Hogan investigation, with IATSE and protests outside the 2300 Arena, NXT ratings taking a bit of a dive on Tuesday night. I mean, all of it, Way. We really exercised our... And hey, Kelly Osbourne as well, making it into the news pack.
It's been a very newsworthy past couple of days, and John and I haven't had a chance to speak about any of those things until now, so thank you. Got a lot of it out of our system, and yeah, a lot of interesting stuff to talk about in wrestling.
Well, on Thursday, I got a lot to get out of my system about Death of the Territories by Tim Hornbaker, because... the most in-demand man, Neil Flanagan, is back. We are going to work this guy till he's got nothing left this week. We sent him to another country. We made him do Pollock and Thurston. I made him read a book this week. And then as he's just like in the Sahara Desert looking for a drop of water, Way is making this guy watch SmackDown. But it's an afternoon show. So you know what? Neil can handle it.
I forgot. We are definitely maximizing our Neil Flanagan minutes here at the Post Wrestling.
He's going to go dark. He's going to ghost us for the next month. He's not going to reply to any requests for the rest of September.
Well, like we said, he has begun his slow takeover of Post Wrestling, and maybe this week is where it culminates, because he did a great job on Flanagan Thurston this afternoon, talking to Brandon about Forbidden Door, his experience there, and also all the latest stories in business stories, I should say, in professional wrestling. But Death of the Territories, tell us about it.
Well, this is a book that came out in 2018 by historian Tim Hornbaker, who has put out a lot of books. He did a history of the NWA. He's done books on Buddy Rogers, most recently one on Ric Flair among them. And this one is looking at sort of what was the makeup of the pro wrestling industry from sort of the creation of the National Wrestling Alliance in 1948, and this kind of just this burgeoning industry throughout the ensuing decades that had all of these offices across the world, but primarily we're taking a look at the U.S. and how strong this industry was before Vince McMahon Jr.'s takeover of the WWF and the national expansion that no company had ever risen to the heights the WWF would, but in its wake is a lot of these, pretty much all of these offices crumbling through various means, whether they be predatory or just kind of self-inflicted. But it's a really interesting look, especially the fact that it ties in with so much history recently on Hulk Hogan, who is a major factor in 1984 and why that year is so important. That's sort of the true north of this book is 1984 and the expansion era. So Neil and I will be chatting about that for Double Double and Espresso members on the Post Wrestling Cafe on Thursday. And then Wei and Neil are back on Friday for Rewind to SmackDown from Lyon, France. And that will take us into the weekend. We've got Collision Course with Bruce Lord joining Kate from Montreal. And you're giving me a puzzled look. Is that one right? Oh, it's right? Okay. I'm doing this all off the top of my head. And then Sunday, we are going to be doing a Clash in Paris show. We will not be going live, though, until 10:30 Eastern Sunday night, because that's the only time we can do it. And that's when Wei and I will be doing our Paris review.
I feel like most people would be more ready to even get a review then, because this after like Forbidden Door, like our numbers were ended up being good, but like live numbers weren't as strong as they usually are for evening. So this might actually be a more convenient time for a lot of people.
So there you go. That's your weekend lineup coming your Wei. And the final note is that beginning Monday, it's open house week at Post Wrestling. We are encouraging everyone, if you're not a member of the Post Wrestling Cafe and you want to experience what's going on in the cafe at no extra charge, all you have to do is sign up for the free tier at postwrestlingcafe.com. You don't have to put in any payment info. Just sign up for the free tier. And for 1 week only, we are putting out all of our cafe exclusive shows on the free feed. So next week, you will get our season finale review of WWE Unreal, focusing on WrestleMania from this past year. There is going to be a Rewind Away covering Survivor Series 1993 from myself and Wei, Post Pro Res with Karen Peterson and WH Park, Collision, and you will get full XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. Could you ask for any more? Probably, but you're going to get a great deal next week. The free tier at postwrestlingcafe.com. Come in, sample what we're doing there, and then maybe you will want to join the cause.
Yeah, cost nothing. Just go to postwrestlingcafe.com, sign up for a free account where we occasionally drop freebies, but none ever more than we will on the first week of September next week, when everything for that week will be free.
Well, tonight we had the beginning of AEW's residency in Philadelphia at the vaunted 2300 Arena, and we had WrestleTix listing a sellout for the show that had 916 tickets out. What did you think about the look, the setup? It was definitely a different like entrance that they had constructed, and certainly this was one of those that AEW has found with these smaller buildings of like having its own kind of look and feel to it. But what did you just think about the aesthetics of the 2300 Arena?
Well, let me just say, like, having been there, it's, by the way, here's a picture of us right in front of it. Just came up. Having been there,
we were not protesting, but we also had, I can say I did not know this was a non-union venue either when I went there.
I did not. No, I did not know either. Great nachos. I think I really enjoyed those.
Almost left my phone there.
It's not like such a distinctive looking venue from the inside, especially after like the renovations. Really, it looks like a black box that could be any sort of like soundstage anywhere.
It's what a pretty like posh like arena now. It's hardly like the grimy feel that you would think. Like I was told by many people that week of just like, there is the ECW arena and what it is and this, and they are like, it's the same location, but they are so different.
Right. So internally, like, it's not like, like you watch this and it's like that ballroom that they were just at, like, it's not so readily apparent, but knowing that it's the 2300 arena gives it that special vibe, knowing that this is the same ground that where all of this other history has taken place from professional wrestling is what gives it its appeal. And I think they tried to dress it up as best as they could by giving us a very similar entrance with like the barbed wire, the cage fence and everything to like an ECW traditional entrance. So I thought they did about as much as they could to kind of capture that vibe.
They did some customized merchandise. If you saw it like in the old kind of ECW style for AEW and then for the sickos on the back of it. So I think that's very smart to be doing, kind of location specific merchandise and just treading on enough to maybe warrant a cease and desist.
I mean, it's a parody logo. Is that not allowed?
I don't know if these companies subscribe to parody when they're in a wrestling war.
Yeah,
but
I guess so.
Like, okay. This is smart stuff that you should be doing when you go to locations, that it's like totally. It's specific to that audience rather than just like your merchandise that you just sell in any market. Mm. They recap the attack on Will Ospreay, who is being held for observation. That's the update we got on Will Ospreay. He's being observed. I'm sure he is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. FTR come out. And I thought we were going to get a riot early on. These two get into these fans' faces. And Cash Wheeler, I thought Cash Wheeler was just going to go off on this guy. And they're going right into these guys' faces as well. It's just like they're playing like the Dudleys in 95.
Well, I don't know if it was just like, I mean, you know, this is Philly, okay? But I don't know if there's just, like, I've been to shows in Philly where, like, you're not seeing this level of hostility. So I don't know if it was just a crowd that feels like, hey, we're in an ECW nostalgic venue. We're going to have to act like ECW fans from 1997. Where, like, this, at least especially in this segment, this felt like a very hostile crowd.
Well, in 2025, you definitely can't say a lot of the things on the microphone that Bubba Ray did in 1998. But Dax came close because he gets the mic and, like, I could hear him, but Dax could not hear himself. So he switches the mic, and this mic definitely works. It is 100% on, but Dax still does not believe it's working. So he hands it, and then we hear him. And the reason I know this mic worked, because I heard crystal clear, just give me the fucking mic. We had our Scott Steiner Survivor Series 2002 moment here with Dax, who was he was off to a great start here.
Well, so even though it was probably live to us, probably not live in house, and maybe that's probably why he was complaining. But Triller also doesn't censor any of this. Like, we heard all of this. We heard
Netflix,
like,
would have been on top of this.
Shut the fuck up from the crowd, you know. But I thought it, like, for him doing this as a heel, I thought it kind of added to the appeal of just this, like, frustrated, obnoxious bad guy. Right?
So FTR has a complaint from the three-way tag at Forbidden Door that Bandido was the illegal man and pinned Dax. So they call out Paul Turner and state how...
Interesting. I didn't realize, but okay. Yeah.
In fairness, they could do this in almost any match, in any multi-man match, yeah. And you tell me who the legal person is at the end. Like, you almost need, like a light tracker to be placed upon the legal man above. Maybe if they go to Fox, the glowing puck technology
could
be reincorporated.
Technopuck.
So Dax explains how he had to tell his family that they failed because of an incompetent moron and wants Paul Turner to reverse the decision and make them tag champions. I don't know if Paul Turner has that power, and he was not changing this. So Stoke runs down Turner, and he gets a no-hose chant and tells Paul Turner to hop off these fans' dicks and reverse the decision. Paul Turner is not hopping off any dicks, and he is the decision is final.
Yes, it is. Yes.
How much of this aired on TBS?
I wasn't watching the TBS feed. Thank goodness.
So Copeland runs out. And he's waiting on Christian, who sneaks into the ring and delivers the kill switch to Stoke. The four men fight, and Cage says, We took care of my problem at Forbidden Door. Now it's time to take care of Adam's problem. And he mentions how Cash and Dax both have fathers. And Copeland is worried, but then he says, go for it. And Christian says, that bitch is dead.
Referring to Cash's father, specifically, or both of them. Both of their fathers. Anyway, terrible, terrible. But it got a big baby face reaction from this crowd.
And Copeland confirms that the match is set with CNC Music Factory taking on FTR on September 20th at All Out in Toronto.
I feel like this entire Adam Copeland AEW run has been him, like, experimenting with names this
and not asking
time.
Anyone for feedback either.
Well, every appearance is a chance to experiment, I suppose.
It's almost the craziest idea that I've heard this week outside of a former AEW wrestler saying, you know, that purple hat thing could have been huge.
Yeah,
the money that was lost on that.
Yeah,
huge.
I would have loved to have seen an I Am Group gimmick using I like this hat. That would have turned out really.
I mean, just think of, like, the what ifs in pro wrestling, and that that's number one with easily. But we got the match for All Out. I think it's also worth noting the fact, like, it does feel like we're going to get a Brodito FTR match out of this, with the FTR having a valid complaint, and at least you should probably set up a rematch. And I don't discount the idea that this could still end up being a tag title match by the time we get to September 20th.
Meaning throwing Brodito right into this.
There's that option, but I got it more of like FTR and Brodito having a match on TV beforehand.
Okay. It's possible.
Why bring this up if you're not going to do that?
Well, they would be owed a championship match maybe after this. Is maybe my thinking. Number one, to protect FTR, but also number two, to maybe claim a tag title match later on. I guess, in my opinion, I also feel like, I know AEW doesn't do rematches, but I think the Hurt Syndicate would probably still be in the mix.
Oh, they've moved on.
You're right. They probably moved on.
They've moved on.
Yeah. Maybe for the best.
Notice how they did not have any problems. They were not coming out here to protest. They were not arguing, hey, we weren't even part of the fall. Like, there was, I don't know.
Yeah.
The tag title scene is in the rearview mirror.
That scenario is interesting. But then I guess I ask, like, well,
I just think this is a lot stronger with Christian and Cage going for these tag belts in Toronto. And I think that's just like, I think it's just a stronger hook than just, it's a tag match. Like, we've seen these two do the reunion, and yeah, this is the grudge match.
So what was the reason to give Brodito the win? To just do another match on TV?
Listen, I thought FTR should have won that match, but you know, it's a hot team, and I guess like that was where they went. But I watched this promo, and I think that you're not bringing up this the illegal man got the pin unless you want to do something with that. So I took this to mean that we'll probably see Brodito and FTR do a match at some point.
I think that's very possible. I guess I'm more so thinking that's after All Out, because it doesn't feel right to just give Brodito, what, like 2 weeks?
Well, FTR is not winning this match in Toronto. I would feel very confident in that.
I wouldn't necessarily feel confident about that. I think we're past the point where like babyfaces have to win, especially babyfaces like Cope and Christian, who are going to be over no matter what. I think for them to lose via underhanded tactics, I think is a perfectly viable result.
Well, we'll see on September 20th. Segment overall, we have our first match for All Out.
Yeah.
Look, if you're still buying weed from some guy named Trevor in a parking lot, you're doing it wrong. Mood.com delivers legal THC products straight to your door. Gummies, vapes, flower, the good stuff. No sketchy DMs, no med card. Just add to cart, check out, and boom, it's at your doorstep. It's legal in all 50 states, thanks to the Farm Bill, and Mood's products actually work. Seriously, this isn't gas station garbage. It's small batch, lab-tested, real results. Go to Mood.com, use code FIRST20 for 20% off, and never run dry again. That's Mood.com. Go get lit, legally.
This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, we're going back to November of 1995 as Rewind Away takes a look at the Survivor Series featuring Diesel defending the WWF Championship against Bret Hart. We'll also have weekly editions of Collision Course with the carousel of co-hosts joining Kate from Montreal, reviews of TNA Victory Road, New Japan's Destruction in Kobe, and it is the Ask Away Mailbag Show as John and Way answer your questions all this month at postwrestlingcafe.com. Darby Allin. He's been busy putting together a video. What a video this was. Darby Allin from the core here. His ear is dripping blood all over his body, all over his hand. He talks about climbing Mount Everest and crying, realizing how fragile life is. It's like, this is the last guy in the world who I would think looks at life as the fragility of life.
Oh my God! Yeah, this guy.
It can be gone in an instant.
this guy is one of the most careless people with life that I think that exists in this world. But I mean, you can't say he does not live it to the fullest. Yeah,
there's this classical music playing over this, and he's painting a mural in his blood that he is coming for Moxley, and the mural reads "All Out" as he warns Moxley, much like when I climbed Mount Everest and was willing to die. That if you come for me at All Out, you better be willing to die for this. And then the mural is set in flames. probably a strong hint that we're going to get some fire in Toronto.
Oh, interesting. Okay, I never necessarily thought about that.
Yeah.
Would it be a lights out match? Was, you know, what are we talking about? Like a flaming tables match?
Almost as violent as a game 7 for the Toronto Maple Leafs in the playoffs. That's how violent it's going to be.
Right. Okay.
They are the recipient of.
Very cool art school student video from Darby Allin, as we've come to expect. I love these.
Do you think he should have had a purple hat in this? Do you think that would have taken this over the top?
No.
John Moxley against Daniel Garcia. Moxley goes with a thumb to the eye of Daniel Garcia. I can't tell you how much I love this, because Garcia was dealing with this eye for the rest of the match. Like, this was maximizing everything here. I really, really enjoyed this match. I thought these two guys were just flawless together. And Garcia, he's dealing with the eye, and he hits this dragon screw onto Moxley. And man, does he sell this. Shafir and Yuta are in the corner. They're closing in on Garcia when Daddy Magic shows up. And Moxley escapes the ring. He's selling his ankle. And Garcia ends up getting sent into the steps. And Moxley goes back to the eye and stomps the fingers. And I promise you, Bryan Danielson has had some effect on these announcers, because they're immediately jumping on how much that's going to affect Daniel Garcia's grappling with his fingers getting stomped. But Garcia comes back. He hits the Les Kellett lariat, as a reference to Nigel McGuinness, but is caught with the cutter out of nowhere. He holds onto the rope, blocking the paradigm shift, and gets the half crab onto the previously injured knee of Moxley. But there's a rope break, and Garcia is DDT'd onto the steps. He recovers, gets the dragon tamer. Moxley transitions to a bulldog, and Garcia gets out of that, hits the pile driver, and tries for the dragon tamer, but this time Moxley has it studied and turns it into a small package, pinning Daniel Garcia. I thought this match was just excellent. I thought this was such an enjoyable match of two guys, like, cold match, and this to me is my evidence of just, you put a great story in the ring, and it was so captivating here with these two. And you did get something out after this, because Moxley is, like, going to the floor, and he's, like, getting into Garcia's face, and it very much seems to be like Moxley is building for the future, and it's like, it's Chris Statlander, and now it's Daniel Garcia. And Garcia's pissed because it's his latest loss. He's clearly in the slow descent, and Yuta is just on the mic, just telling Darby that Moxley will not accept his challenge for All Out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They continue to be teasing a Garcia heel turn, and I think Garcia would be a great addition to the Death Riders. And if somehow, I'm sure Nigel is still going to be involved in all of it. If it also somehow, like, gives us the, you know, Moxley and Nigel in each other's realm, I think that would also be a lovely little thing as well. I thought this match was excellent. It's on paper a match that you wouldn't have expected to be so competitive, John Moxley versus Daniel Garcia. But I thought they came up with a very believable story of Mox having that injured knee that made him susceptible to somebody specifically of Daniel Garcia's style. And it made for a very compelling technical battle, and one where you could really buy Garcia beating John Moxley. I thought the work was really strong, and I thought Mox ultimately just did such a great job of elevating Garcia to a level that was closer to him via a match like this. So great chemistry with these two. I'd love to see what comes of it.
Yeah. Of the three kind of similar matches he's had recently with Jet Speed and Garcia, I thought this was the best of the three. And that's like that Bailey match I thought was really high as well. And this one was exceptional. I really enjoyed this. Yuta came back again after the commercial, and he says that, "I'm from this city. I used to do ring crew in this building," which begged the question if he was a stagehand and what his wages were, and says that this is what I get, referring to the chance of fuck you, Yuta. He says, "Your cheers don't mean anything to me, just like they meant nothing for Will Ospreay, Chuck Taylor, and Bryan Danielson. He slayed the dragon, and I replaced him." The lights go out, Sinatra begins, and Hook returns. And he came out, and he put out Yuta with the
I don't
red
know
rum.
If it is. Is it Sinatra?
No. It feels like it's a knockoff of something.
So it's a song. I did use Shazam for this, and it's a song called "So Tell the Girls I'm Back in Town" by J.J. Johansson from many years ago, but
okay. Recent.
Yeah. Very cool. Very cool. It's the same music as he used in the ads.
Yeah. So it's an interesting shift for Hook. I mean, no real change to the visual presentation of Hook, but
he's not in a hoodie. He's got Jack, this guy. Wow.
I guess so. Yeah. I mean, he's been busy. Mm-hmm. He's been lifting.
This is what eating potato chips can do, evidently.
There's a promo with MJF after Forbidden Door. He blames Mark Briscoe.
Sorry, did you go through the actual segment?
It just said he took him out with the Red Rum. Was there anything more?
No. He took him out with a Superman punch.
He did the Red Rum, and then he did a forearm smash to him. And then, yeah, I guess
looked
that's...
like he was some sort of Superman punch. And because this was a smaller ring, might have just like miscalculated some of the wind up there. But I wonder if he'll continue to go after the Death Riders after this, or if this was just like that. This is the end of that. He got his revenge on Wheeler Yuta, and like I've moved on. Of course, there's also the ops that is a lingering thread that I think they have to answer for as well.
So MJF blames Mark Briscoe for the loss and says how the fans, when he was getting beaten, chanted "You deserve it," and they chant cowboy shit for Hangman. And it's like the audience, he does not have the audience with him. He says, "I should have burned Briscoe alive, and I will next time. And now I have to give advance notice for my title shot. But when I sign this contract, it's not for a title match. It's for your soul." But he's going for Mark Briscoe first.
I thought it was a really strong promo from MJF, complete with like crazy horror music in the background. And I thought the tone of this was, I mean, to me, it gave you a more horrifying and scary and serious MJF coming off of this loss and also the news from Tony Khan. So it's the type of promo where, despite losing, he actually looks even more threatening than before, which, I mean, is an incredible skill for somebody who can to achieve on the microphone. So he's going to destroy Mark Briscoe.
And that probably has to be a really violent affair between those two.
Man, yeah.
Megan Bain and Penelope Ford against Chris Statlander and Harley Cameron. So we see Bain in with Harley Cameron, and she is after Bain for revenge. They did a double team moonsault onto Harley, and then her nose starts bleeding as they call attention to this from underneath the face mask. There's a double moonsault attempt, and the heels miss out of opposite corners, and then we get into a procession of strikes and suplexes. All four are down. Cameron manages a tornado DDT to Bane on the floor, and Statlander stops a poison Rana and takes Penelope Ford on into like an electric chair, but drops her face first and applies this new submission of hers, which was not given a name, but she has used, and taps out Ford, or verbally submits her, because both arms are pretty much hyperextended.
Yeah, I believe Taz called it a crazy ass. Oh, sorry, that was the other move. Never mind. Statlander did this thing with Cameron. That was a double T move that Taz called crazy ass pendulum gimmick.
That was in there too. Yeah, crazy ass pendulum gimmick.
Please name this move for a Chris Statlander Taz. Excellent match, I thought. I thought, like, man, I really do think this entire women's division has been leveling up lately, and I thought everybody shined here. Of course, you have the powerhouses who, I mean, I think to be a convincing giant, one of your most important traits is to have that confidence that you can look dominant and you're unstoppable, and I thought Statlander and Bane both had that here. They both look great, but, like, the two lighter women showed a lot here too. Ford and Bane are showing some great and double team moves here. And Cameron, for somebody still so new and I would say more known for her personality than her in ring, I think she's more than keeping up with the very high standard of this division. So I was very impressed with everybody.
Yeah, yeah. Crazy ass tag team gimmick.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So Statlander and Bane keep fighting, and Willow Nightingale runs into the ring and is standing near Chris Statlander, and Harley Cameron gets in between them. And so they are teasing if Harley can bring the two together, which, again, we keep talking about this elusive blood and guts potential. And, I mean, this is one very, very, very long story that they have been holding on to that I guess can be the two coming together.
It's at the point now where if they don't announce Blood and Guts involving like this crop of women, people are going to be very disappointed. So I have to think that that's where we're headed at this point. And we just have to wonder who else is going to be on these teams. And this lingering Death Rider story attached to Chris Statlander, where is this all ending up?
We come back from break. Renee is in the ring, and it is all decorated for Nine Belts Monet, as her eight belts are on the desk, and then she comes out with the TBS title. She is going to smash Ultimo Dragon's record of 10 titles and dismisses Alex Windsor, stating she did not tap to Alex Windsor. Instead, there was a bug in the ring. And if Alex Windsor wants to ride the money train, she'll beat her senseless and put her in the hospital with Will Ospreay. And then she says, I want to dance. And she danced. And that's how the segment ended. No one confronted her. I was like, I just felt like the segment felt very incomplete at the end.
Well, I mean, she kind of said all she needed to say, right? I mean, Alex Windsor is going to be her next opponent. Windsor was not pinned. So that looks to be the next match, right? We also have now a goal of sorts for Monet. She is going for Ultimo's record of 10 championships.
She should have tried for the speed title.
Well, yeah, that would be the it is a title incorporating other promotions, so maybe she could. So I mean, something tells me that like this 10th championship, I feel will be a bit more prominent than some of these others. So I hope it's a big match. And I guess I wonder at this point who else is still out there for her.
There is Athena,
who she's already beat. No, you cannot. You can't take that one, too. No. I wonder.
Then we head off to Sandy Fork, Delaware, where Mark Briscoe speaks about the importance of the 2300 arena. And he says he couldn't make it this week, but he has a very valid excuse. And I could not believe this. He's had another baby. Fuck. Baby Mac Briscoe. I mean, dude, he just had another one. Like, what? A week ago?
Are you sure this isn't it?
I could have sworn Mark Briscoe had a baby, like, within the last year. I thought. Maybe I'm conflating.
I mean, you could be right, yeah. How many is it now for him?
I don't know. I don't know what the number is. It's,
like, who has more kids, him or Jacob Fatu?
Oh, I think Mark has hit, I don't know how many this would make. This is like eight, maybe?
Oh, my goodness. This might be nine, dude. Yeah, nine? This is nine. Holy sh... Oh, man. Can you imagine?
No, dude. Absolutely not. I imagine? No, I cannot imagine nine kids.
Can you imagine, like, you can't even fit them all in a minivan, man? Like, he's going to have to buy a bus just to drive his family to, like, dinner, you know? Like, what? Like, can... I just what's unfathomable.
Okay, what would your partner say, Wei, with your nine kids at home and you saying, "Hey, time for me to go off to work for the week. See you in 2 days."
I'd be like, "Well, when are you going to get your tubes tied, buddy? Like, I can't. Like, just this family doesn't need any more people. Like, nine.
Do you think they're done? I don't think so.
Well, who's going to have more? Will he have more children than Mercedes Bonet will have championships is the question.
Oh, okay? Man.
Maybe he will go for Ultimo
Briscoe.
Record. Yeah.
Okay. This was unbelievable. And then he hands off the baby to someone off camera and then gets into a heated promo on MJF, who tried to light my ass on fire last week. Well, he's coming for MJF. He's going to light his ass. He says, "You told me I can't win the big one, so I have someone to address. Kyle Fletcher, we're 2-2, and I want to challenge you for the TNT title. Will you man up?"
So I mean, I feel like over the past month, like, I've been a huge proponent of, like, hey, like, Mark Briscoe, I hope he wins the AEW championship. I think he's that type of, competitor. Something tells me he's going to get destroyed in both of these matches, both by an MJF, who's probably going for Paige's title sooner than later, and Kyle Fletcher, who is unlikely to lose this championship anytime soon. So he's going to be on parental leave, and I think he will take quite the beating to get his way there, I feel, this guy.
Well,
oh, man. Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling.
The all-star eight-man tag was Kazuchika Okada, Konosuke Takeshita, Hechicero, and Josh Alexander against Brodito and Jetspeed. Callis is the introductions. He's out with Wardlow. And they did do a semi-push for Death Before Dishonor on Friday, which, as of last check, has four matches announced. So I would expect a slew of additions on Thursday night. But the main event is Bandido and Hechicero, so they tried to give a bit of focus on that. When mentioning Mike Bailey as a fellow countryman, Don Callis does not recognize Quebec as part of our country.
I'd love to see him cut a promo in French. I wonder if his French is as good as his Spanish.
Yeah, maybe. Forget getting a Frank Valois reference from Paul Heyman. Maybe we'll get a Lucien Bouchard reference from Don Callis when they come up here.
Lucien, yes. Yeah, sure. Why Lucien Bouchard?
I mean, he was part of a Parti Québécois that were 1995, the referendum.
Yeah, I know, but why him in particular?
Well, maybe he's going to push this separatist movement on Bailey. Maybe this is just planting seeds.
Gotcha. So,
Callis compares Josh Alexander's grip to that of Danny Hodge, and King comes in. Crowd was into him here. Him and Hechicero are just trading blows, and then they had this mid-ring crossbody and just both go down. Bailey and Takeshita are in briefly. They made multiple mentions of Takeshita going for the IWGP title and listing the date of October 13th. And then they did this spot where Bailey is in the corner, and all the members of the Don Callis family are taking turns running into the corner, but then Takeshita removes Bailey, so Okada's in mid-jog and has to hold up. And I thought it was just going to be a subtle thing, but then we're right into a shoving match between these two, so it does really feel like we are accelerating things toward Okada and Takeshita. And quite frankly, given the injuries, maybe Takeshita now is the time that you kind of start to move this guy towards more of a babyface position.
I guess why do you say that? Because of the injuries?
Because they need they need some top babyfaces right now.
Oh, because I thought you were talking about like Takeshita being worn out. Because
he is too. Yeah,
I know you have a lot of guys that are outgoing, but fucking Takeshita just did the G1, and he's just having like that level of match every time he's got a singles match. So I mean, I get concerned for him, man.
Yeah, like, I mean. Yeah, but I mean, this guy comes off the G1. Everyone's worried that he got like knocked silly in a match, and they send him out to face Ishii on Collision.
Yeah, I know. So maybe he should learn something from the Okada pacing. You know, whenever this match does take place. But is there more matches?
Yeah, more to come here. Takeshita hits a Topikon Hero, which was quite the feat because there's basically no room to dive in this setup at the 2300 Arena. Bailey ducks a Rainmaker. Knight hits a springboard clothesline, and then it's Bailey with a Frankensteiner off the top to Alexander. But Alexander moves out of the way from Ultima Weapon and cradles Bailey, and it is Josh Alexander that gets the pinfall on the non-Canadian.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I thought this was an amazing match. To me, like, this is the type of match that continues to make like your Dynamite, like the best in-ring pro wrestling show on TV. You know, like a match like this doesn't necessarily have any stakes attached to it. But
it's like the multi-man tag you'd always get on the last night of Bola with the eliminated, and it's just this cavalcade of random guys that would tear the roof off. And you can do so many of these mixing and matching every week on Dynamite. And we're going to get a similar one next week.
Oh, yeah. Like, random, everybody's got their own style, but everybody is fucking amazing. And so even if there are no stakes attached to the match, the quality of the match becomes so good that it becomes a can't-miss match. I thought this match had actually good storyline development as well between, of course, Takeshita and Okada. I love the way that they showcased and built up the rivalry between the two through the forever clothesline spot, and then also like the tagging miscommunication. I did not think they'd move on it this soon, but I certainly think the audience feels ready, and I I'm ready for whatever they're going to do here, because I think Takeshita, there's only room for one token Asian in any group, okay, John?
Yeah, that's why we had to get rid of our third co-host back in the day. Wei would not stand for it.
No, in our case, we got WH, we got me, all right? That's more than enough.
Hangman comes out and thanks Ospreay for everything he's done, and when Ospreay is ready, he hopes he can come back and challenge me for the title. Very presumptuous of Hangman. He expects a long title reign. And he says, MJF, you failed on Sunday. You threw everything you had. You still failed. And if you ever sign that contract, I'll beat your ass before the ink is dry. Don Callis comes out.
So, I mean, it feels like that match is certainly not going to be for All Out, and maybe more so for the whenever is coming up afterwards.
Wrestle right? Dream. Yeah. I mean, when you have a pay-per-view every month. Yeah, it does feel as though they've put these obstacles in front to go somewhere else. And maybe we're going to get a hint of this coming, because Don Callis mentions their history, him and Hangman, that you won your first AEW title from me, but that's only because I had a weakling as champion, referring to Kenny Omega. He wants that belt in the Don Callis family, and it's only a question of which member is going to take it from you. And we get Josh Alexander, Lance Archer, Hechi Cerro, and my pick to dethrone Hangman, Rocky Romero, coming out, and it's 4-on-1.
Poor Rocky.
So it's the four guys of the Don Callis family that you know don't have a prayer of unseating this man as champion, which was funny. So Romero gets handed a baton. There's a big attack on everybody. Jet Speed runs down, and then Kenny Omega arrives. And he runs down, and this culminates with the Don Callis family members sent out of the ring, leaving Lance Archer, and we get a throwback. We get the Buckshot V-Trigger combo between the former tag team champions, and a reunion and an embrace in the ring. I mean, if there is one thing that Tony loves, it's their bad blood and then reunions. People coming back together.
You know, wrestling shows you that no grudges last forever, okay? No matter how much you might hate somebody, even if you might set somebody's house on fire, there's always a chance to forgive and forget and to move on and become tag team partners again in the future. Okay. There's an important life lesson to be had there. I love this. Are you suggesting, and I think a lot of people are, that this is the match at All Out, or do we get the tag team before it?
I think we do get a tag match between these two, maybe coming out of next week's 8-man, but I do, by the end of this, I felt like the tease of a Don Callis family member was almost like a red herring, and this could be the Toronto match.
It would certainly be a pay-per-view level match. And if we're talking, this is a very important show for AEW. They're going up against one of the biggest WWE shows of the entire year, and they're going to need something really big to headline, several things big to headline. Kenny versus Paige, I think, would at least provide like a spectacle type of, you know, drawing power attached to it.
Like if you're looking at this match, potentially this match with the Copeland and Cage match with FTR and Moxley and Darby, like those are three very strong matches on a pay-per-view that will not have Swerve and will not have Will Ospreay. Like that's a big blow to like any company losing two talents like that. That's going to hurt your depth, but this is a roster that has an extreme amount of depth that you can still pivot and put together that. Like that's three very solid matches, say nothing of whatever else they have figured out for that show. But I just hope that a lot of this is kind of in place. Like we're only like 3.5 weeks away from this show, and I wouldn't want to be holding off on this too long. Like I think you do want to build up that anticipation. And I would say by the end, hopefully by this time next week, we at least know kind of at least the directions of like your top like three or so matches for the show, because you want to build these up rather than just draw them out on TV. Tony Storm and Mina Shirakawa, this was a total promo just to build up the match for Death Before Dishonor. This was a lot more promotion for an ROH pay-per-view than typical, like an actual segment here where basically Tony Storm cut the promo for Mina Shirakawa and to prove that her hand is healed, slapped Tony Storm. And then we cut to Athena, who's doing a promo, stating that Mina Shirakawa wants to dance on top of the 2300 arena, so she'll throw her off of the building, and she'll do what would make the Blue Meanie quiver and the Sandman shit his pants.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Which I would imagine there's been a time or 10 that Jim Fullington has probably shit his pants in this venue.
Oh, my. Yes. Perfectly, like, fine.
This is 25% of our card that is announced so far for Friday.
Yeah, perfectly fine to promote this match. I guess, like, for me, I do wish our first appearance from Athena on Dynamite, I do wish it was more of a sort of, like, reaction to losing to Toni Storm and losing her contract, you know, which I think, like, is a big, you know, occurrence that shouldn't have just been glossed over like this.
That's fair. You know, there were several elements of the pay-per-view, like even the, like, I thought the Paige MJF spot with the three count, the erroneous three count with the foot on the rope was going to be a bigger deal, but maybe that's more of a point when you are going back to that match, which tonight felt less of a immediate rematch.
Yeah, in my mind, I wanted like a similar type of promo to what MJF had reacting to the Paige loss. You know, yeah, that to me is what would have protected Athena despite the loss.
The ops against Ricochet and Gates of Agony for the Trios belts. There was a big reaction for Shibata when he tagged in. He felt like a big deal here when he was in. And man, him and Bishop Khan just chopped the hell out of one another. Shibata's chest is red from all of it. Then Toa Leona and Hobbs come in and we get big meat chants. They do a double clothesline and these dudes just smash into one another. Like the sound was incredible. Joe and Ricochet are tagged, and then it's Toa with the pounce onto Joe. There's a penalty kick to the back of Toa, and then MVP shows up and nails Ricochet from behind with a cane, leading to a spinebuster by Hobbs, PK from Shibata, and submits to the Coquina clutch. And the Trios champions retain, and then Lashley and Benjamin show up to attack GOA, and that seems to be our post-title direction for Lashley and Benjamin, and they got over that tag title loss. They might not have watched the pay-per-view yet. They might not even know who the champions are.
Oh man, that's so crazy. Like, I thought for sure we were going to get some sort of like at least rematch, but man, they're done. They're out of here. And who wins that match, you think,
John? This is now like the attraction of the Hurt Syndicate is like, how much can they get? Like, that's sort of like the game now for everybody, because there is nothing that is being presented on television to counter this narrative that has been attached to them.
I mean, the idea that like this run that they put so much into could just end this way, I think would only just confirm all of these stories and suspicions. What a waste of time.
That's how a lot of people are feeling here. It's like it just feels like a very incomplete story and angle. And it's just sort of just this gratuitous booking that's not really getting anyone else over. And it's kind of just playing itself out that way.
I hope for the sake of Gates of Agony, this is a competitive feud, because I think they've been doing a great job with Ricochet. Finally, they found something that has managed to stick, and they've all looked great together as a unit.
This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, we're going back to November of 1995 as Rewind Away takes a look at the Survivor Series featuring Diesel defending the WWF Championship against Bret Hart. We'll also have weekly editions of Collision Course with the carousel of co-hosts joining Kate from Montreal, reviews of TNA Victory Road, New Japan's Destruction in Kobe, and it is the Ask Away Mailbag Show as John and Way answer your questions all this month at postwrestlingcafe.com. Darby Allin and Claudio Castagnoli in a catch-as-catch-can style match. Falls count anywhere. So Claudio is in the back on his way out when Darby leaps off of this crate and the bell rings and we have begun. And I had like forgotten about this spot, but this alone was just violent as hell, where he is placed into a shopping cart and just launched into these open chairs that are set up in the back. and then gets slammed onto a flat screen monitor where his back just crashes onto the floor. This is all like, and his right ear all bandaged up from Sunday.
This is all in the first like minute and a half.
This is immediate. Yeah. He takes the giant swing in the aisle into the barricade, and they finally make their way ringside, where Darby climbs up the like lighting truss and does a coffin drop off of it, generating a two count. And then Claudio, inside of the ring, instructs the announcers to move from the desk. And I guess Claudio, maybe he saw the Javon Evans spot on NXT or at Heatwave and said, you know what? That's nothing. Darby, I've got an idea. And he proceeds to military press this guy from one side of the ring to the other and perfectly hits the target of this desk, which is a lot more impressive than I'm describing it, because this was some serious distance that Claudio had to cover with this human being from the ring to the desk. And what added to the, a lot of these spots, it's sort of like you just forget about them because there's so many of them. But this one, I did like the fact there was no commentary, that it felt more dramatic. And we also got about 105 replays of it. And if you're going to do a spot like this, let's replay the hell out of it so people will remember this. And
the vibe of it really felt like a like an old ECW show when like Joey Styles would have to move out of commentary because of something like this happening, right? Like I wonder if it was maybe even an intentional, you know, decision. I mean,
well, it worked. Like stylistically, yeah. It worked without the commentary. I thought it was like a nice breather to not have anyone like shouting and reacting to this. It was just watching
chaotic.
The spectacle of it. And man, yeah. It was just replay after replay. Claudio does restore their chairs so that they have a place to sit and call the match. That was very kind of him. And then we have chairs brought out. We have tables brought into the ring. Darby gets swung off of his back after trying for a guillotine and moving to the back. So Darby is attacking with chair shots, puts one around the neck of Claudio to get retribution for Will. But then Claudio gets up. He hits a gut wrench off the top turnbuckle to Darby onto a sea of chairs, and then tries for a beel onto the table. Table didn't get the warning and does not break. So Claudio power bombs Darby through the table, another two count. And after Claudio gets sent into an exposed turnbuckle, Darby makes his comeback with a code red, two coffin drops, pinning Claudio on the final one. And Darby wins with years of his life left in this Falls Count Anywhere match, but kind of par for the course with this individual as well. A total insane stunt fest spectacle that this crowd loved and was just totally nuts, as you probably expected it would be. Everything you could envision in this match, it achieved.
I thought this was incredible. Like at a time when the standard of TV wrestling is the highest it's ever been, I thought this stood out like far among the pack. To me, it felt very clear that these two came into this match aspiring to replicate the energy and mood of a Mike Awesome Masato Tanaka like spectacle, and I thought they completely nailed it. To me, it was like by far the most vicious I've ever seen Claudio Castagnoli. This Claudio could be a top heel of this entire company if you saw this level of viciousness, but he's not. You're not going to find an opponent like Darby Allin for him every single week, unfortunately. I'm so scared for Darby Allin's future. But I so appreciate the entertainment he's willing to provide us through his suffering. And let me also just say, it wasn't just the violence and grandeur of some of these spots that made it. It was the precision with which it was all executed. I mean, for all the craziness that occurred here, this was not at all a sloppy match. You know, it was quite the opposite. Everything was perfectly executed, including that incredible throw from Claudio to Darby through that announce desk. The fact that it was like a TV length match rather than a pay-per-view, I thought worked to its advantage because it was just, you know, bam, 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 action, 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 and one incredible spot after another. And the fact that, of course, it was in this like intimate, small, legendary arena with this rabid crowd completely accentuated it as well. So I thought it was one of the best TV matches of the entire year. One of my favorite matches, certainly from Claudio, maybe even of Darby's as well.
Yeah, I mean, it capped off, like I thought, like a really solid first night here in Philadelphia. And it ends with Gabe Kidd showing up in a hoodie, attacking Darby, followed by Moxley. And then Darby escapes doom by racing into the crowd. Kidd pursues him, but Darby escapes out of the building and he's pissed off. So it would look like Darby has to kind of run the Death Rider gauntlet to get to Moxley with Gabe Kidd next up. And they promoted that next week it will be another all-star eight-man with Hangman Page, Kenny Omega, and Jet Speed against Kyle Fletcher, Josh Alexander, and the Young Bucks. So you will get Hangman and Omega with the Young Bucks, which was one of the greatest matches in company history, in a ring next week as well. For Collision, do you have all this? Do you want to write all this down? Saturday night, live, coast to coast. That's our lineup for Collision.
Well,
so tune in.
I'm sure you'll hear about it on Friday night after the ROH pay-per-view. But that's a big one for next week. Should be a hell of a match.
I thought Dynamite was excellent on Wednesday night. I mean, it was a spectacular main event. I love that Moxley Daniel Garcia match. Like to me, I think like there's plenty of guys. There's a lot of room for like just different styles, and that to me was a perfect one of just taking two guys, and you can have a really, really just compelling 14-15 minutes. The audience loved it, and I thought that was well worth everyone's time. But we got the announcement for All Out. Like overall, like they followed Forbidden Door, I thought, with a really, really strong show. We'll see how these shows hold up with like this many nights in Philadelphia as well. We do have seven of them altogether if you include ROH. But I thought for night one, I liked the vibe. I don't think like the smaller venue is a detriment. It was, I think if it looks full and it's a lively crowd, it comes off great. So that was my feeling on it. I thought this was like a very strong episode of the show.
I think this might have been one of my favorite Dynamites of the year, at least strictly talking about the in-ring content. I thought almost everything was, you know, just fantastic. In varied in style, and just
yeah, we didn't even talk like that all-star eight man, like there was nothing bad with the trios match, the women's tag. Like this was a very strong in-ring show with some good angles on the show as well, and getting a sense of a direction too. Like if it's Hangman and Omega, Darby and Moxley, and then the tag match, like you are getting, you know, they are getting everything lined up. All right, everyone. Well, there you have it. Dynamite in the bag. And we are going to be shifting over to the forum to get some feedback from everybody. But as always, you can follow all of our work over at postwrestling.com or postwrestlingcafe.com, where the latest edition of Book Club is dropping on Thursday for Double Double and Espresso members as we chat Death of the Territories by Tim Hornbaker. And then Rewind to SmackDown Friday, Collision Course Saturday, and Sunday night here on this channel, 10:30 Eastern Time. Way and I will be live to talk about Clash in Paris.
Will you please say it like that every time you mention it?
Perhaps I will, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
I look forward to it. Goodbye, YouTube. This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. Postwrestlingcafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.